become a postdoc at Seoul National University in Korea. So outline of my talk is as follows. First of all, I'm giving a brief introduction to inflation. What is inflation models? And next, I'm going to explain what is a quasi-single field inflation and why should we need such a type of inflation models. And after that, very recent ideas, I'm going to explain the effective field theory approach to inflation. What is that and why should we need to such a possibility, such an approach? And by combining these two ideas, we would like to write down very generic action for the multi-field inflation models and to apply quasi-single inflations. And so how power spectrum of quasi-single inflation models are predicted or so, or something like that. But I'm not sure I have enough time to talk about all topics. So today in the afternoon, I will be in the office, in the Takeshi's office. So if you are interested in these topics, please ask me and discuss with me. And finally, I summarize my talk. And as you know, inflation can naturally solve the problem of the standard Big Bang cosmology, such as the horizon flatness. And the important point is that they can actually give the origin of density and the tensor fluctuations. And so inflation generically predicts that our universe is spatially flat. Of course, some complicated model can predict an open universe, but generally speaking, it can predict a flat universe. And they also predict almost a scale invariant, adiabatic, and Gaussian primordial density fluctuations. And all of these predictions are now strongly supported by the recent observation of cosmic microwave background anisotropies, and especially from the temperature-temperature correlation, the position of the first peak strongly suggests our universe is almost flat up to the several percent. And also, temperature E-mode correlation, strictly speaking, temperature E-mode anti-correlation at large scale strongly supports the primordial fluctuations almost adiabatic, and it should experience the super horizon epoch, which strongly supports the inflationary epoch. Okay, but of course, there are still rumors for FNL more than 10 or several percent isotope perturbations. But so just 9 days later, we will have a Planck new data, which strongly constrain or detect these features. Okay. So now we would like to pin down or just give a constraint on the inflation model buildings. So typically speaking, inflation models can be classified into two categories. First one is a single field inflation. Actually, there is only one light field. Okay. In that case, this degree of freedom corresponds to the curvature perturbation, adiabatic mode. And there is another category. That is a multiple field inflation models. In this case, we have a lot of multiple scalar fields, and which correspond to not only the curvature perturbation, but also the isocurvature perturbation. And in this case, of course, we have a strong constraint on isocurvature perturbations, even at the present. So we have to satisfy such a constraint in this model. But these two categories are classified by a number of effectively massless fields. Okay, so is this kind of classification sufficient? That is a question. Okay. But for example, now, unfortunately, we don't have a signature of supersymmetry in LHC, but SUGI is still quite powerful candidate beyond the standard model of particle physics. And so in the context of supergravity, actually, which is a local version of global SUGI. So in supergravity, typically speaking, almost all scalar fields get mass comparable with the Hubble scale, because in the presence of inflation, which is always supported by the non-zero potential energies, such as non-zero potential energies at least mediated by gravity to all scalar fields. So typically speaking, any scalar fields get a mass comparable to the Hubble parameter. Okay? So in supergravity, such a situation quite naturally happens, in which that there is only white light field, which corresponds to the inflaton and adiabatic mode. But there are a lot of scalar fields with mass comparable to the Hubble parameter. Okay? This kind of category is not classified into by the previous two categories. Okay? But this situation is quite natural in the context of super. Yes. Yes, okay. So you break the gauge material? Oh, I mean that, for example, if we consider the D time regression models, we don't have this kind of situations. But if we consider the F time regression, this situation is quite natural, you mean? Did you mention the gauge field?
So generally, the fact that you break the proximity doesn't mean that all your fields are as massive as that, right? You have soft current, but you also have a lot of.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so of course, so if we consider the gauge field effect, this feature can be modified. But generally speaking, this feature is at least mediated by gravity. So order of magnitude does not change. Okay, if as long as the inflation model, inflation scale is, I mean that, okay, in the standard model of particle physics, we have a hierarchy between the break of the Suji and the electric scale. So we need to learning the coupling of a mass scale from the breaking of Suji scale to the electric scale. But in this case, inflation itself breaks the Suji. So we don't have such a learning. So typically speaking, we have a Hubble mass breaking. Okay? And this model is called a quasar single inflation model invented by Chen and Wang 4 years ago. So now we have a new category called a quasar single inflation model. Okay? So we have only one light field, which corresponds to inflaton. But we have other not light field, which whose mass is comparable to the Hubble scale. Okay? This new category is completely different from the standard multiple field inflation models. Okay? And naively, you may wonder that these fields does not have significant effect on the primordial curvature perturbations or something like that. But it does. Okay. Yes.
The way you generate these masses is through this non-minimal coupling to the curvature.
Oh, we don't. Of course, that is one possibility.
What are other possibilities?
Oh, so you mean, I mean that. Okay.
Yeah.
So, in general settings, the supergravity can generate a such a thing, even without this kind of coupling, nominal coupling.
No, but the point is that the Hubble is, I mean, the Hubble, of course, changes during inflation, right?
Yes.
So if there is a dynamical process that generates a mass that's the same as the Hubble, then of course, it's not going to be a constant mass. It's going to be changing because Hubble is changing.
Yes. Yeah. But during inflation, the mass of the Hubble is almost constant. So with such assumptions, this feature is robust.
Well, okay, so I mean, Hubble is almost constant, but it's not
yes.
Exactly constant.
No, not exactly constant. So we have to take into account such an effect, of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I mean, that's kind of my point. Is that, like, if, for example, R5 squared is how you get it, I mean, isn't it better to just use that, instead of assuming a massive field, just use that R5 squared term?
You mean that? So okay. So in this in our context, we don't go into the detail to the origin of the Hubble scale, Hubble mass. Just we assume that such a field. These features can naturally lead to the this kind of Hubble mass. That is just an example. But our formulation does not depends on such a concrete models.
I mean, I guess my point is that, I mean, the terms that generate this, they also lead to other things. Right.
Okay. But so yes. So if we go into the details of this mass, this model, so we have to take into account another effect also. But in this case, we don't forget about other things. And actually, the one of the merits of effective field theory approach, and which I will explain later, is that just we can pick up only such an effect. It does not depend on the other feature of the models. Okay, I'm going to explain later. So we have now new categories of inflation models. And so you may wonder that such an isocurvature, I mean another light field, not light field, another field with a Hubble mass may not contribute to any curvature perturbation. But this is not true, because mass is almost Hubble. So of course, after the horizon exit, if it takes a long time after the horizon exit, the fluctuations are almost suppressed. But around the horizon exit, it can contribute. Okay. So actually, if we have a mixing between adiabatic mode and this isocurvature mode, so for example, we can have a diagram like this. This is a pi and pi, which is adiabatic mode, and pi mode is converted to the theta, sigma, by use of this kind of mixing. So these 2-point Fourier functions have additional contributions coming from the sigma. Okay? And also, it can generate large bispectrum, because if we consider the 3-point function pi, which is the adiabatic mode, curvature perturbation, and in addition to this mixing, if we have a collinear coupling of sigma, so pi, sigma, and this sigma has a collinear coupling. So we have this kind of diagram to generate bispectrum. And important point is that, typically speaking, this kind of self-coupling for adiabatic mode is suppressed, because to keep the inflation model, to keep inflation long, this kind of self-coupling pi cubic, coefficient of pi cubic must be suppressed. Otherwise, inflation cannot last long. But this sigma, the coupling of this sigma is not necessarily suppressed. Okay? So which can generate large non-Gaussianity. That is the reason why we need to take into account this field also. So we'd like to investigate this kind of feature in more details. Actually, original model of quasi-single inflation model was discussed by Chen and Wang 4 years ago. And they considered this kind of constant term models. Okay? If we have a straight line to the adiabatic mode, and we have just an isocurvature mode of the isocurvature with the Hubble mass, so we don't have no mixing, and we don't have any effect on the adiabatic mode. But this kind of term generates the mixing of isocurvature to the adiabatic mode, so which can generate a significant effect on the adiabatic perturbation. Okay? Actually, if we have a homogeneous equation, we use a background equation motion, so this sigma, which corresponds to the isocurvature mode, is almost constant. I mean, this field just turns round with a fixed radius. Okay? And so important point is that this sigma does not sit on the extreme of the original potential, because we have now the trajectory is just turning round, so centrifugal force was caused. So to compensate such a centrifugal force, the potential must compensate to such a centrifugal force. So this sigma zero is actually not minimum of the original potentials, but the minimum of the, this kind of effective potentials. This is just the original potential, and this term represents the centrifugal force. And so both forces must be balanced. And that determines the position of the sigma. Okay. And this, and so they discuss the feature of the curvature perturbations, taking into account this sigma effect. Okay. This is one approach to quasi-singular inflation models. We consider the particular model of quasi-singular inflations and discuss the feature of the inflation models. Okay. But generally speaking, we have two different approaches to inflation models. It does not apply to not only for quasi-singular inflation models, but also to generic inflation models. And actually, just 5 years ago, Chen et al. Invented a new approach to inflation models. First approach is quite standard. Just we would like to consider a model with a particular type of potential and a particular type of kinetic time. But that both of them are well motivated by some particular physics model or something like that. That or spring theory or something like that. And based on these particular type of potential and kinetic time, we predict the perspective curvature perturbation or non-Gaussian ET or something like that. That is one approach. But another approach is which invented by this guy. First of all, we consider quite generic actions permitted by the symmetry preserved during inflation, which means that, okay, during inflations, we have a time clock, which corresponds to the adiabatic mode or the velocity of the scalar field. Okay, such a, the presence of such a scalar field breaks the time diffeomorphism invariant. Okay, if we have a exact time diffeomorphism invariant, so inflation cannot end. So in order for the inflation to end, we need to break time temporal diffeomorphism invariant. Okay, so but any other time-dependent spatial diffeomorphism is conserved during inflation. So we would like to consider quite generic actions, which preserves this unbroken diffeomorphism invariant. And based on such actions, we would like to investigate the property of the inflation, spectrum or non-Gaussian or something like that. Now, of course, these two approaches are complementary. I mean, if we know the quite well motivated inflation models, so this method has some, this method is favorable. But without such a, but unfortunately, we don't have an ultimate method of the particle physics. So in that case, this method, this approach is also quite important. And one of the merits of this approach is that, as I explain later, but what is essentially important to generate large non-Gaussian ET or just to leave the variation of the sound velocity, we can easily understand what is the essential reason to generate such a large non-Gaussian ET or variation of the sound speed. It can be easily understood in this setting. I will explain just. So, first of all, I'm going to explain the effective field theory approach to inflation. And first of all, I would like to confine to the single field case. So, basic idea is effective field theory is as follows. First of all, as I said before, inflation must end to be followed by a hot Big Bang universe. Otherwise, we cannot live here. Okay. So, for the purpose, we have a non-zero variable phi dot. Otherwise, we have a temporal invariance. Okay. So, such a presence of the phi dot spontaneously breaks the time-dependent invariance. Okay. And so, now time-dependent spatial diffeomorphism is still unbroken. We can just, the spatial diffeomorphism is conserved, and we can take any spatial coordinate under such a situation. So in the low energy effective theory, any term respecting on the unbroken symmetry means that time dependent spatial diffeomorphism invariance should be allowed. Okay. So based on these ideas, we can investigate quite a general property of perturbations generated during inflation with resort to a particular type of Lagrangian, particular type of potential or kinetic term or not. Just we write down any action which respects the unbroken this spatial diffeomorphism. So based on such actions, we can evaluate the property of the curvature perturbation or something like that. So for the purpose, it is a very convenient to take a unitary or commutative gauge to write down the any action, any term respecting the unbroken symmetry. Because in this gauge, we don't have any fluctuation scalar field. Just to we take a time clock which coincides with the homogeneous mode of the scalar field. So any perturbation of the any curvature perturbation is encoded in just a matrix. Okay? Scalar field does not fluctuate in this gauge. So we have now graviton has 3 degrees of freedom. Curvature perturbation, degree of freedom curvature perturbation, and Poisson perturbation. We don't have any fluctuation scalar field, okay, in this gauge. So in this gauge, information of the curvature perturbation is encoded in the matrix, gravity. So we can easily write down the any action, any quantity respecting the time-dependent diffeomorphism. Because now all fluctuations are encoded in the matrix, so we have only to write down any quantities respecting on the time dependent diffeomorphism invariant. Okay, so first such a quantity is of course 4-dimensional scalar quantity of the coming from the matrix, okay? And next one is a generic function of t, because even if we take a spatial coordinate, this t is invariant. Okay. So, and of course, if we take a covariant derivative t and just to contract with any other tensors, so such a quantity also invariant under the spatial diffeomorphism invariant. So it means that if we take this combination with any tensors, which means that any tensor with upper index is permitted. Just if you make a spatial transformation, so you can easily find that this kind of component is still invariant. Okay? And also, if we consider the covariant derivative of this derivative, derivative, so its information is completely encoded into the extrinsic curvatures. Strictly speaking, all covariant derivative of derivative can be written using the extrinsic curvature plus derivative of G00. So, but this component has already included in this one. So any quantities respecting the time-dependent diffeomorphism can be written the combination of G mu nu, K mu nu, or R mu nu rho sigma, and the covariant derivatives, and these derivatives, and T. Okay. Of course, all indices must be contracted because this is the scalar quantities. But any quantities respecting this symmetry, it can be written by these quite generic functions. So now we'd like to discuss fluctuations around the Friedmann universe. Okay. So just we expand the background quantities. So delta G00 is given by the G00 plus GT. Now we take a sign minus plus plus plus. And K mu nu is given, delta K mu nu is given by the difference between K mu nu and the background quantity. So if we take a background quantity, so this fluctuation can vanish. Okay. So now let's consider the zero and the first order in fluctuations of the actions. Okay. So now we have some possibilities in the first order. Okay. We have a G mu nu, K mu nu, R, or something like that. So we have many candidates at the first order in fluctuation. But the first candidate is, of course, G naught naught. And the second one is the derivative of G naught naught G0, or K mu nu, R naught naught, or K naught naught, or R naught 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 naught. Any quantity can be appear in this action. But just we take make an integration by parts, all of these quantities can be recast into this form. Okay? Only G naught naught can appear. And of course, K naught naught should be zero due to the coming from the symmetry. And R naught 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 is also must be vanished due to the anti-symmetric of the indices. Okay, so we can easily show that in the first order in fluctuations, this is the most generic action in this context. Okay, so variation with respect to G naught naught and Gij giving the standard Friedman equation motion. So these coefficients can be yes.
And how does the power counting work? How do you determine what is an order?
So in this case we don't have a power counting. Power counting is not necessary. Because I mean that as long as the fluctuation is a first order.
First order in what?
First order, okay, I mean that. This is a first order, just means. Yes, so delta G00 naught times naught naught times delta G0 naught naught should be second order. Okay, so as long as we take these quantities should be first order, this is the most generic action. Okay.
Sorry, in the Ricci scalar that we've written in red over there, does that include the complete metric or just?
Okay. Oh, this one?
Yeah, this one.
This one is a. This one is, okay, this is include all the information on it. And but, okay.
But that one is not zero to first order.
Right. No, on that?
Is that first order, second, and zero order perturbative, or is that the full metric?
Okay, this is the full metric. Because this is just a gravity degree of freedom. So not the scalar curvature, it does not represent the fluctuations. So this is, in some sense, background quantities. But information is, all other information that encoded.
Okay, so the gravity part, we keep the full metric, but on the matter part, you use this representation.
Not strictly speaking, it does not apply. So if we take into account the full orders, just we have going to the any orders. So in some sense, this is included any orders. And we consider, generally speaking, we can consider any order in the perturbations. But here, just we take into account the first order. And just in order to derive the Friedman equations, we have only to use this one. But this quantity is based on the Friedman matrix. So in such a sense, this represents a zero order value. Okay. But in principle, this quantity can include any perturbations. I mean that. So we can write down any orders in fluctuations, this order comes from the, of course, this order, this term can appear, and up to the first order, and second order, third order, anything like that. So in such a sense, this is completely generic. Okay. And but this term is necessary to describe the background quantity. So we introduce this one. Yeah.
Why can you not have derivatives on k mu?
Oh. K derivative of k mu. You mean the
dy mu dy t times some function, some times some of some function of t times k mu k mu k mu zero.
Oh no. You mean this kind of interaction?
No, don't contract the indices of k. Just contract the derivative of k.
Derivative of
that's related by means of Fibonacci. That's related to d mu of trace k by the Gauss Fibonacci. Just the momentum is an equation.
Yeah. So sorry, what kind of term do you consider?
Take the derivative of any function, take some function of time times k, mu nu, take the derivative of that.
Are you mean that this kind of quantity?
You can always do an integration by parts.
Never mind, I'm not so good.
Okay. If this kind of interaction, this kind of term can be decapped into this form by integration by parts. But okay, let's discuss later. And so now we'd like to write down the any terms up to the any order. Okay. So in the previous slide, we stopped up to the first order in fluctuations. But of course, we can write down second order terms and the third order terms and any order terms can be written like this. And this is the most generic action in unitary gauge, which satisfies the time-dependent exponential deformism invariance. Okay? So, but please remember that this action breaks the time-temporal deformism invariance. Okay? This action is invariant under the time-dependent spatial diffeo. But this action breaks the time diffeo. Okay? And so now this action is derived in the unitary gauge, but in order to, if we would like to move unitary gauge from unitary gauge to another gauge, which is useful. So in that case, we need to apparently recover this time deformism invariance. Okay? So for the purpose, we would like to use the circular bag tricks, which is useful to apparently recover the broken time deformism invariance. Because under this trick, we can easily transform from one gauge to another gauge. And so we can easily understand what is the most generic action in any gauge. Okay. So now, only time diffeo is broken. And so if we time diffeo means that coordinate t is shifted to some variables. Okay. So to recover such a time diffeo invariance, we introduce the Stuckelberg field pi, which compensates this shift. Okay. So if we assign the variation of the Stuckelberg field under the time diffeo modified invariance is as follows. So this constant shift, this shift is compensated by this pi. So t plus combination t plus pi is invariant under the temporal deformality invariance. Okay. So it means that in the unitary gauge, pi for them, it is fixed. So this time deformality invariance was broken. But if we introduce these Stuckelberg fields, apparently we can recover time-dependent deformism. And so we have only to make the following replacement for the any action in any gauge. Okay? I mean that this is the most generic action in unitary gauge. But in order to, if you would like to know the most generic action in any gauge, in that case, we have only to make this kind of replacement. And just to fix the pi corresponds to one gauge. And in case of pi equals zero, which corresponds to unitary gauge. So by using the Stuckelberg tricks, now we can write down any jet, we can write down the most generic action for fluctuations in any gauge. Okay? So important point is that now let's consider the, some particular term like this here. Okay? So we let's consider the, this term. Planck squared Hartle dot times 1 plus pi dot squared d0 g naught naught. Okay. So this term includes these two terms. First term is just first term consists of just pi. Okay. And another term has a mixing pi dot times delta g naught naught. Okay. So the important point is that any mixing term between pi and g have fewer derivatives than those terms with only pi. Okay? Because this cross term always, this term has two derivatives. But this mixing has only one derivative, which comes from the construction of our strategy. So if we make canonical normalizations. So at some energy scales, I mean that above the critical energy scales, this mixing couplings always suppressed by slow roll parameters. Okay, of course, in this case, we don't have no special derivative. So just only epsilon parameter appears at the critical couplings. But if we consider also the this kind of special derivative coupling. In that case, we have another slow roll parameter coming from the sound velocity or something like that. But as long as such a slow roll parameters are small, any mixing couplings are suppressed by the terms which include only pi. This is a quite generic feature in this context. So,
This is still a single field example, right?
Yes, this is single. But as I don't show, but we have already confirmed that even if we consider the multi field case, as long as some slow roll parameters are slow, of course, it is not only epsilon, but also the epsilon times the sound velocity of pi or sound velocity of sigma, such as slow roll parameters are suppressed, this feature is completely generic. Even if we go into the multi-field case or something like that. Okay. And so, above the some critical temperatures, we can completely neglect this kind of mixing terms. I mean that so in some sense, Gaussian boson pi can decouple from the degree of freedom of gravity. Okay. Because this degree of freedom, okay, G00 just to describe the degree of freedom of gravity. And you may wonder that G naught naught corresponds to the shift function. G naught I corresponds to the, G naught naught corresponds to the Lux function. And G naught I corresponds to the shift function. And both are just a constraint equation, satisfy constraint equation. So it means that G naught naught and G naught I, of course, represent some curvature perturbation. But important point is that such a term always suppressed by the slow roll parameter compared with the curvature perturbation. So in such a sense, at this decoupling limit, Gaussian boson pi, which represents the curvature perturbation, completely decouples from the shift and lapse and also gravitational degree of freedom. I mean the gravitational waves. So we have only to evaluate the correlation function of pi, we can easily evaluate the correlation function of the curvature perturbation. Because other components are completely suppressed by flow rule parameter in this decoupling limit. So if we take a decoupling limit, we have only to consider self-interaction term for pi. Okay. So just to take a write down, okay, we have only to expand any terms, expand any terms up to the any orders, and drop mixing terms in the decoupling limit. So we can obtain the only the self-interaction for pi. So the one of the merit of this effective fuel cell approach is now quite manifest. Okay. Now this C pi square represents the sound velocity of the curvature perturbation. I mean the pi. Okay. So the origin of deviation from unity of curvature perturbations come from the distance. Okay. With this coefficient, yes.
I'm a little bit lost, but did I understand where when you started off talking, you were interested in multi-field models.
Yes.
And you're going to track what happens when the fields are of massive order H. And then now you're talking about single field fluctuations.
Yes.
And I know that if you had done the multi-field fluctuation story, it's much more complicated because the extra, you don't have the simplicity that the curvature perturbation
yes.
is everything, right?
Yeah.
And so somewhere along the lines, it sounds like, are you making a transition to describing the multi-field case in terms of an effective single field case? Are you going to make an argument that you can do effectively a single field calculation and capture the physics of the multi-field case?
Yes.
But so that's what confuses me, because I know that supposing we put aside the whole fluctuation story and we just asked for just two scalar fields, when can I describe two scalar fields in that kind of a bench trough scenario?
Yes.
When is it true that the physics of the two fields is well captured by one field? Normally you need a hierarchy of some sort. You need to have that the scales in the problem involving the other field are large compared to the light scales. And it's not sufficient to have the mass at the bottom of the trough be large, but also the radius of curvature, for instance, of that trough has
yes,
to be large. But you're specifically interested in the case where everybody, where the you don't have a hierarchy because things are sitting at the Hubble scale.
No. So now I just confined to the single field case. But after, after 10 minutes later, I'm going to explain the more general situation. And
I'll wait for that. Then.
Yes, I don't. So our case does not confine to the square section case.
I think you should probably go faster so that Dave has enough time to criticize.
Just only single case. And
get to your point.
Actually, this is not my work. Okay. And so one of the merits of the this approach is that it is now quite manifest that in which case sound velocity of curvature perturbation can deviate from the unity. Okay. The presence of this M2, okay, which originally come from this kind of coupling, this kind of terms, okay, the presence of this term leads to the non-trivial sound velocities of curvature perturbation. Okay. So in this formalism, it is quite manifest which term leads to the non-trivial sound velocities. And also, as for the cubic interactions. So you can easily see that if sound velocity of the adiabatic mode significantly deviates from unity, and it can be very small, so we have a large cubic couplings, which can lead to the large non-Gaussian. Okay.
So let me just interject a little bit here, but I know you'll address it later, but that's what worries me, is that I know that in the cases where you do have a hierarchy of scales and you can integrate out the second field, it is true that the effective operator that captures the physics dominantly is a modification to the speed of sound trim, but by construction, it's suppressed by the ratio of scales that allowed you to integrate out the heavy field. And so, so c squared minus 1 is the thing that has to be small.
So strictly speaking, you are right. Strictly speaking, if c pi is extremely small, in that case, okay, now this action is derived only the this part and this part. So if we, so in case of that, in case that the sound velocity is extremely small, in that case we need to take into account the higher order identity, higher order terms.
Well, I'm not worried about higher orders in the single field case, well, unless you go to infinite order. I'm worried that the whole approximation of, if you're in the limit of the speed of sound is not small, and you started from a relativistic theory of two fields,
yes,
then you're probably in a limit where both fields are important, and it's saying you can't replace the one.
What do you mean both fields? In this case, we have only one degree of freedom.
I think it's still waiting for you to get to the two field case.
Yeah.
This is just a single field case.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. This is just a single field case.
Single field, I have no problem.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So please wait. And so, yes, so now we can easily understand why, how sound velocity can deviate from unity and how such a small sound velocity can lead to the large long Gaussian. It is quite manifest in this context. Okay, that is one of the merits of the, this effective field theory approach. Okay, and now, so I would like to clarify the relation between pi and curvature method zeta. This is originally invented to make the theory temporally invariant. I mean, this is just a Stueckelberg field. Okay, so let's consider the flat gauge. In this case, curvature perturbation fluctuations completely encoded in the pi. Okay, and so now we would like to make a gauge transformation like this, temporal gauge transformation. So if we take a t is equal to the t plus t naught x, and so in that, under this gauge transformation, pi are transformed like this. So in order to take the pi equal 0, so we have only to take c 0 equal to pi in this coordinate. So in such a gauge transformations, this matrix is transformed to like this into the unitary gauge. So now we can easily understand that curvature perturbation zeta corresponds to minus h pi. Okay. So if you would like to estimate the correlation function of zeta, you have only to evaluate the correlation function of pi times h square or h cubic or something like that. So that is a this is a relation between curvature perturbation zeta and pi. And in order to evaluate the correlation function of zeta, we have only to evaluate the correlation function of pi. That is another merit in this setting. So in the previous slide, we have an action form on the pi. So we can easily evaluate the any correlation function of pi, which means that we can easily evaluate the any correlation function of zeta. Okay, that is the trick in this context. So strategy of the FFT theory inflation is that, first of all, just write down any terms, any action in the unitary gauge, because it is quite easy to write down any terms which respects the unbroken special diffeomorphic invariant. Okay? And after that, by using the Stueckelberg tricks, we can obtain the action for Goldstone bosons. Okay? And so if we take a decoupling limit, mixing terms can be neglected in some such a decoupling limit. So we can easily evaluate the any correlation function pi. And so now we have a relation between pi and zeta. So by using this method, we can easily evaluate the any correlation function for zeta. That is the strategy of the effective field theory approach, okay, in single case. Now we'd like to move on to the effective field theory approach to quasi-single or multi-field case. Okay. So in the context of multi-field case, actually, effective field theory approach in the multi-field case was first discussed by these guys 3 or 4 years ago. But in their settings, they introduced a shift symmetry in the additional degree of freedom. But in the setting of the quasi-single field inflations, this isocurvature mode has a mass. And it actually, it manifestly breaks the shift symmetry. So we consider the more, we need to consider more generic situation. Okay? First of all, action in unitary gauge can be completely deleted by these members. Plus, now we have additional scalar degree of freedom, sigma. Okay? So we have only to evaluate any action in unitary gauge which respects the special difference invariant. And expanding around the Friedman background, so up to here, it is completely same. Just represent the background geometry, Friedman universe. And now we have a second order term and a third order term and coming from the these stuffs. Okay. So now we have a total action can be classified into the adiabatic part only which comes from the only gravity or some pi. And it second component includes only sigma, and we have also another mixing term. In this case, mixing term means that between adiabatic mode pi and sigma. Okay. It does not represent the mixing between pi and the gravity degree of freedom or something like that. Okay. So first of all, this part is completely coincide with the single field case because it just represents the adiabatic mode. And so by using the Stukelberg trick and taking the decoupling limit, we have a completely same action for the adiabatic mode. Yes?
So here you have a sigma, which is rather heavy. So
it is not necessarily heavy.
But it has publicized mass.
Yes.
So like the small parameters for all the fields are not necessarily small. So can you take the decoupling limit in a similar fashion?
Yes, exactly.
Why?
But this is just the gravity part. There's still, I mean, you
have it is not yet. Yeah.
It hasn't been that. The other parts are still there.
Yeah. Okay. So I didn't prepare the slide, but if we take for example, if we take a flat slicing and can expand the any action in the by using the lux and the shift and any quantities. So we can easily evaluate that. Even in this case, decoupling limit is just by the these slow roll parameters is small. As long as these slow roll parameters are small, in addition to the standard epsilon, even in this case, decoupling limit is completely confirmed. Okay. If you are interested, I will show you my note, which takes a 40 or 50 page, but we definitely confirm that this decoupling limit is justified as long as these parameters are small, even in this case. And so now, yeah, this is action up to the second order for just coming from sigma. Okay. So now you can easily understand the reason why origin of the as long as alpha 2 equals non-zero, sound velocity of sigma could be deviated from unity. So even in these situations, we can easily understand the origin of non-trivial sound velocity and non-trivial coupling or something like that. Okay? As long as this term is present, we can easily obtain the non-trivial sound velocity even for sigma. That is the merit of in this approach.
Excuse me.
Yes.
I got confused. So, in the single field, you argued that how the each term appears is because you took the there was one field that broke the term diffeomorphism.
Yes.
And then you could choose the slicing based on that. And then you have two fields, you pick one of them as the.
So even if now we have a strictly speaking 4 degrees of freedom. One is the adiabatic mode, and two is the gravitational wave mode, and another we have another degree of freedom. Okay, so now policy is that. So okay, so this mode is behave like an isocurvature mode. I mean that it does not depend. It does not determine the trajectory of the universe, trajectory of the inflation, which is completely correspond to, which completely correspond to the adiabatic mode.
Yeah, but isn't there ambiguity in the specifying like adiabatic versus isocurvature?
No. So in this situation, okay, we have two fields, phi and sigma, for example, and just we take this field correspond to adiabatic. That is the definition in some sense. So, n delta phi. And as long as if we take fix this, okay, I mean that just to, we take the, okay, so now we have a degree of freedom of the temporal coordinate. And so we just set this time coordinate coincide with phi. Okay. So, by these settings, we consider what is the adiabatic mode and what is the isocurvature mode. So in some sense, this is the definition. And this is the definition of the unitary gauge. Okay. So finally, we can easily write down the mixing term between the adiabatic mode and the sigma. And even in this case, we can easily evaluate which mixing term appears coming from the each term or something like that. So if we evaluate the bispectrum or power spectrum, and so as long as we write down any terms, we can easily evaluate the effect of the such terms. So this is a fraction in the decoupling limit up to the third order, and it is a bit long and just to, you forget it, but generally speaking, okay, we have some adiabatic mode like this, and only sigma terms and mixing terms. And please remind you of that. We have now very generic mixing between pi and sigma. Okay. And so, of course, our formula. Okay. This action should include the original model of the quasi-single inflation model. So this is the original action of the quasi-single inflation. And now background solution is completely determined by theta naught, which corresponds to the adiabatic degree of freedom. And just isocurvature mode is fixed there. So in unitary gauge, as I said before, the clock is set just delta sigma equals zero. Okay. So in this gauge, we can write down this action by metric component or something like that, and expands any terms. So the details are not important, but we can definitely, our framework can definitely include these original models at a particular choice of the parameters. Okay, so as long as we evaluate the power spectrum or bispectrum based on our formulas, just to taking the concrete parameters, we can easily evaluate the power spectrum or bispectrum for any model of quasi-single inflation models. Okay. And now we would like to go into the just far from the quasi models. And so we evaluate the, we would like to evaluate the effect of heavy particles. It is not necessary we don't confine to the masses comparable to Hubble. Okay, it could be much larger. And so let's consider the simple example this is just a Einstein Hilbert option, and this corresponds to adiabatic mode, okay? And now we consider the additional field sigma, but we only have this kind of mixing couplings, okay? So as long as the mass is much larger than half, so in that case, sigma quickly rapidly oscillate around the minimum and go to zero. Okay. So in such a situation, after the long time of the oscillation, kinetic term of sigma is relevant just to stay at the minimum. Okay. So we can make a how to say in English, just to integrate out of this sigma degree of freedom. So we can now obtain the effect action like this. And so please remember that the origin of non-trivial sound velocity of adiabatic mode come from the, this kind of interaction, okay, delta G naught naught. So in these formulas, it is quite manifest that effect of this coupling of heavy fields leads to the non-trivial sound velocity of adiabatic mode. Okay, so and so it is quite manifest for for this effect in our formula. Okay.
And in particular, it's probably true that you need to assume that. In particular, it's probably true that you need to assume beta over m is small to justify keeping only that term.
What did you mean? Sorry, I cannot hear.
So this is the point where you're making the transition from multiple fields to single fields.
No, effectively, yes.
And so normally what would happen when you integrate over the other field, if it's true that if it had been heavy, then the contributions of the heavy field would be controlled by powers of 1 over m.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be why you can keep a few of them and then collect all the other ones.
Yeah.
Because in general, it's a mass, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking that when you truncate your Lagrangian to look at only this term, are you assuming that beta over m is small?
Beta over m number small?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So in this case, we don't confine to any type of beta. I mean that, for example, if beta is proportional to n, so okay, in that case, even if we take a heavy mass limit, this term is still present. But if beta is independent of m, so if we take a heavy mass limit, this effect should vanish. So, I have not yet understood your question, but
I think you're making the assertion that everything that the sigma field does can be captured by that one term, and that you can choose at the same time beta over m to be order one.
You mean this term should be unity?
You would like it to be large, I think.
Yeah, even
so,
if you
my
like.
My question is, normally that's actually a very strong assumption, because normally when you integrate over a sigma field, it appears all over the place in the Lagrangian, and so it may be true that that term is large, but there's other terms that are equally large that are competing with that term to get
uh-huh.
the physical effect you're looking for. And so if beta over m are small, you could argue why those other things are small. But if beta over m is one, I don't see why it should be true that there should be a single field description that's simple.
Okay. You mean that if this term could be order unity, so
the burden is to show why all the things you did not write are small.
Let me see. Okay. I think as long as this condition is satisfied.
If that's true, then I'm happy, because then you're saying that things are small.
Yeah.
But there may be a hidden assumption that beta has to be also small compared to m. In the examples that I know, that's I can't remember what beta is in your model where you have two fields.
But I think that beta is not necessarily small.
What is beta?
Beta is this coupling.
But if you go back to your original model where you had the
triangle. Okay. Sorry. This beta is not relevant to the previous slide.
But if I had chosen to ask what it was in that particular case, what would it have been? In the particular case that I was looking at, that two scalar fields in the trough,
yes.
I could calculate beta in that.
Yes.
Case. And what would it be?
Okay, so in this case, for example, in this case,
it was R squared, right?
Okay, so in this particular case, we have a, this beta is determined by this. Okay, and so in this case, this it depends on the Hubble dot, so it could be suppressed by slower parameter. Okay, but the point is that.
But also, there's a hidden assumption that say, this is something which is, this is the example that I do know, is that the approximation of replacing the two fields with one field in that bent trough case requires that R is also large compared to the scales we follow.
Yes.
And so you're doing a one over R expansion in addition to the other expansion.
Okay, but okay. This is a particular model for the original models. And but our discussion does not necessarily for does not necessarily apply to any particular case. This is a quite generic situation.
Well, that's what you say, but I'm worried about the things that you did not write down, which would be large when beta is large. And so,
take for example sigma to the fourth.
Yes.
Right. Once you integrate out, you have things like delta g to the fourth power. There's no suppression.
Is it true?
No. For the same reason you get delta g squared, right?
You mean that?
There's no symmetry that forbids sigma to the fourth.
Yes.
So write it down.
Yeah.
Do the same integration, you will get delta g to the fourth.
Oh, yeah. But we don't discuss it. I mean that.
But this is what Cliff is saying, is that you're not writing. You're deciding what terms you're writing.
Yes.
But given your approximations, there is no reason not to write other terms.
Oh, okay.
And they may be as big as the things you calculate for the observables you calculate. That's the word.
Let me see. Okay. Oh. But of course, it depends on the models. But generally speaking, this sigma is still first order fluctuation. This sigma represents a fluctuation degree of freedom. In some sense, this should be sigma is first order in sigma. So in such a sense, this is a higher order term.
In what small thing?
Performed function. Yeah. Fluctuation in force. So of course we can consider the we can consider the large coefficient to sigma, but generally speaking, this is the subdominant. So in such a sense, we need to take into account the delta g not not squared, but up to the second order, this is a completely generic interaction.
Okay. For example, you didn't write down a d0 sigma term. So that, you're essentially assuming that speed of sound was...
Ah, okay, yes. Okay, so in this slide, we skip the, for example, this kind of interaction. But even in this case, we have a similar effect on this. We have already confirmed that. Okay. This kind of interaction, even if we consider this kind of derivative interactions.
So I guess the point is that this is just a simple example.
Yes. Up to the second order, this is just a very simple example. And even if we consider the other term like this, up to the second order, the effect is still
I'm happy with your first line. The first line, no one can stop you from saying you've got a function of sigma and the other fields and you're going to work to quadratic order. That's fine. But just when you write your middle line where you're saying, now I have a field of a similar story where I have only the one fluctuation, that's where I worry. I worry that things that you did not write, you know, that your transition from the, your statement that the middle line is going to capture all the physics of the dynamics of sigma,
yes.
I worry whether it's under control. If the speed of sound is large compared to, or different, very different from one.
Ah, okay. Yeah, yes, okay. So in such a sense, if this sound velocity is becomes much smaller than unity, in that case, this treatment is not enough, to be honest. Yeah, we need to take into account the higher order terms than the, as I said before, that's the delta K mu or something like that. These terms must be included. But if this is not significantly small, I mean, just we would like to evaluate the heavy particle slightly, I mean, the heavy limit. In that case, this example takes some feature of the such effect. If this is significant, actually, this should be, in case this term is comparable, in that case, you are right. We need to take into account more higher order terms. That's right. Yes. And in that case, we have not yet analyzed the effect. Yeah. Sorry. And now, back to the power spectrum of the quasi-simple equation. Please forget the heavy field effect. Okay. In this case, now we consider the quasi-simple field case. And so, this is the adiabatic part, and this is the kinetic term and the mass of the sigma. And we have a generic mixing term like this, pi and sigma in general. And so we treat these interaction, these mixing terms as a perturbations. And so as for free part, you can easily take the mode expansion and like this. Of course, this U is a solution of the free field in the Toshita background, but B must be B must be satisfied that this kind of interaction with non-zero mass in the Toshita background. That determines the mode function. Okay? And now, so we have many contributions to the two-point correlation function pi, because we have now mixing. So we have just a standard pi and pi, and we have a mixing pi, sigma, sigma, pi, which come from the beta 1, beta 2, beta 3. And also, in this case, we have a derivative couplings. And so, in generally speaking, with the presence of the derivative couplings, interaction Hamiltonian does not necessarily coincide with minus interaction Lagrangian. And actually, we need to take into account the additional terms if we write down the full Hamiltonian. Okay? So this term also, we need to take into account this term also. So finally, we can evaluate the correction of the power spectrum coming from the sigma terms, okay, which originally come from the mixing. And so this C represents a deviation from the single field equation case. And now we make an assumption that some time dependence of these mass and sound velocity of epsilon is negligible. Under this kind of situation, we can easily write down the mode functions U and V. This is a massless mode function, and this is a massive mode function with mass equal mass, with a non-negligible mass. And so we can easily evaluate the two-point correlation function of zeta by use of the two-point correlation function of pi, because zeta is related to minus h pi. So just we have only to evaluate the correlation function of pi times h squared. Okay. So we can write down the deviation from the additional effect of the sigma. Okay. And we don't go into the each terms in details, but we have just write down, we have just shown the figure of the C11, C22, or something like that. And if we take the mass is larger than the Hubble, of course, this kind of modifications should vanish. Okay, in the heavy mass limit, this effect should be vanished, but around M sigma equal to unity, we have many effect of modification of the power spectrum, like this. And this dotted line is a numerical result for some sound velocity RS. RS is a ratio of the sound velocity of pi and sigma. And only RS equal unity, in that case, we can evaluate these modifications by analytic methods. And but okay, analytic method means that we need to evaluate the integrator of the Hankel function or something like that. And we can say that this is an analytic result, but it is just written by the latent transient function, which is defined by like this. So I'm not sure this is analytic or not, but anyway, we can write down. And actually, this is my first case to treat this function. Okay, anyway, we can write down. And of course, we can confirm that this analytic result coincides with the numerical calculation for specific case. Okay. Yeah, yeah, okay. So, let me summarize my talk. So if you are interested in the, some sudden case or bispectrum, please ask me. Okay, so I summarize my talk. In this talk, we have constructed the most direct action in the unitary gauge for multi-field equation. And so taking decoupling limit is just by the adequate slope parameter, and it makes very clear for the origin of the non-trivial sound velocity of the origin of the cubic interaction, something like that. And so in the constant timing case, we can easily evaluate the power spectrum of the curvature perturbations for in any case by numerical calculation or something like that. And I don't have enough time to mention the squeeze limit of bispectrum of in this model. But it is quite important for discriminating the single field model from the this quasi single inflation model. Because, you know, by virtue of the consistency relation of the Malthus-Sennert, we know the squeeze limit of bispectrum for single field case. We completely know the momentum dependence of the squeeze limit of bispectrum in the single field case. And in this case, it can deviate. So from the observational viewpoint, this feature is quite important for discriminating the single field model from this quasi single field model. Okay. Thank you very much.
Perhaps in due to the time, we have maybe just one quick question that we'll carry on as a discussion session. Let's carry on this discussion. Thank you.